Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Mighty CBP. I'm Len, and Joey has the night off. He's been running hard lately. He's been doing a marathon of shows, so he's taking the night off. Good for him. And he's actually going to be at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference. So if anybody's going to be heading over there in the next few days, say hello to him. I'm not going because I have family obligations to take care of. But either way, I want to talk to Zach. But before I could talk to Zach, there's two things I got to do. I got to talk about a couple of sponsors we have on our show. Number one, we have EasyDNS, and they are the gentlemen, the people, the individuals, everybody behind our website, CanadianBitcoiners.com. We would never have gotten our website done without the help of EasyDNS. So we host our content over there because we believe they are good providers. Check them out. Do your research. You'll probably come to the same conclusion as well. They also not only provide you with web hosting, but you have email hosting as well. So if you have your email and it's hosted somewhere else, you can migrate it over. You're good to go. So you can have it in a secure location. Also, you got virtual private servers. You could do Nostr relays, nodeless IO implementations, and you could pay with Bitcoin as well. Canadian dollars they'll take. I'm pretty sure they'll take US dollars, but Bitcoin they will take. So check that out. Mark and their team, I have to admit, they're top notch. We came to them many, many times with help, with questions, with ideas, and they've been always there to give us the service that we need. So if you are like us and you need a helping hand along the way, they'll be able to provide that for you. So there's a lot of different options you have there. Also, if you're looking to buy a domain name, you could do it with them. So check them out. You won't get rugged because they are privacy focused. If you use our promo code CBPmedia, you get 50% off your initial purchase. Second sponsor is Bull Bitcoin. And price of Bitcoin jumped up today. So maybe there's people are looking to buy Bitcoin, or maybe people looking to sell. I don't know. Either way, they got you covered. You can buy on-chain. You can buy with Lightning. Lightning is good when fees are high. Fees are not. So on-chain, at least in my opinion, do your own research. I think it's a pretty good idea to buy on-chain right now, and Bull has you covered. You could also use your Bitcoin to pay your bills. What do I mean is if you have a bill like car bill, mortgage bill, whatever, you can use Bull Bitcoin to facilitate the paying of that using your Bitcoin. So the price of Bitcoin goes up. You want to start selling it, start using it. You can pay your bills with your Bitcoin. It's pretty cool. Not only that, you could also use your Bitcoin through Bull Bitcoin to buy gift cards. And with those gift cards, you could start spending them in the real world. So like a Home Depot or whatever. So indirectly, you're going to be spending your Bitcoin living on the Bitcoin standard, just the way Satoshi wanted you to. So check them out. If you use our promo code and you open up an account, $21 is going to be added to your account after you fund it and provide the necessary information. So, yeah, that's the stuff I had to take care of. Now to bring on the man of the hour, Zach. Zach Bomsta. Hopefully I pronounced your last name correctly. How are you, buddy?
Nailed it. Nice. Awesome. Not many people nail it right the first time. So good job.
Thank you. That's good to hear. I like the way you have the Bitcoin B in the Bomsta. That's really, it's a little bit of a nice little flavor you put on there. But Zach, I just wanted to, like, before we dive deep into Loki Kit and other type of things that you're working on, I want to talk about your background first, because you have a very interesting background from what I've been researching on you. I see you were into baby monitors at one time, for instance, electrical engineer, from what I understand. So, I mean, you have a very interesting background. Maybe you could just give us like a real quick overview of who you are, because we could introduce you to our audience.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a small town boy from Idaho. Grew up surrounded by a bunch of farmland and cows, youngest of eight. So come from a large family. My dad was a small country doctor that was a Bitcoiner at heart. Unfortunately, he passed away before the white paper was released, but just all of his, we were raised very much with his libertarian views. And, he was a small country town doc that would barter with his patients for payment, right? So he was accepted taking payment in honey or chopped firewood or garden vegetables. And so kind of set the stage, I think, for some of my that aligned very well with the Bitcoin community. But yeah, so small town boy from Idaho, went to school, University of Brigham Young University in Provo, mm-hmm. Utah, studying electrical engineering. I have a passion for electronics and hardware, and really love working with hardware and firmware. I love the intersection between hardware and firmware.
while going to school, I was involved in, I don't know, a half a dozen startups. A few of them took off. One of them was on Shark Tank not too long ago. Another one was sold to a robotics company. But really the biggest success was Owlet Baby Care, where we developed a smart sock that goes on a baby's foot, detects heart rate and oxygen levels, and then relays that information to a parent's smart device and can alert parents if baby stops breathing. That one got my attention because I had a 3-month-old, and at the time that I was approached with this idea, I had a 3-month-old. My wife and I were, brand new parents, pretty young parents. We married young, had kids young. And when I was approached with this idea, it was just like light bulb moment, had to be involved, got involved, through my passion for electronics into it. And, started developing this baby monitor that, became pretty popular. And over the course of about 10 years, we serviced over 1.5 million parents with peace of mind with this smart sock or this baby monitor, and eventually went public back in 2021. And so, unfortunately, during my time involved, I was the CTO and one of the founders of the company, and I was working 100-hour weeks for 9 yeah. plus years. And unfortunately didn't have a ton of time to, I didn't make time to study Bitcoin. When it was first brought to my attention, my first thought was, one, I don't have time for this. And two, it sounds like a government spying technology anyway, if it's a public ledger that anyone can see. And I just brushed it aside. And, it wasn't until Owlet went public, I was able to take a step back, go on sabbatical, and really dive down deep into the Bitcoin rabbit hole that I came across this amazing technology and just, got really passionate about being involved and figuring out how to hyper decentralize Bitcoin mining.
So you're relatively recent into the Bitcoin sphere. You're in it just for a few years, but you've made an impact in that very short period of time. So
thanks. That's good. Well, I hope I'm making an impact.
I think so. I've talked about your products a few times, more than a few times, in fact. And the reason why I talk about it is because S9s, I think, up until very recently, they're very inefficient, let's be honest. And after the last halving, it made it 50% less efficient. But still, people were using them for heating their homes, especially here in Canada. It's, the winters get kind of cold. And Quebec is a region that has cheap electricity. So there are, there's opportunities to heat your area, your heating, your environment with an S9. But now it just seems to be no longer the case. But with the devices you have created, and I want to talk about them, it's giving an opportunity to use more efficient equipment out there, like an S19, for instance, and you could mine them using 120 volts. So I want to hear about these low-key kits. Like, how did you, and hopefully I pronounced it right too.
Yep, that's right. Yep, low-key.
How did you come up with the name, number one? That's something that's kind of interesting for me to understand the roots of that.
Actually, can we talk about what it does? Because then I think the name just makes sense.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Cool. A little bit of background story here. So, I was getting in with a passion for hardware. When I was first getting into Bitcoin, I was a little disappointed, I guess, because what I perceived, wanting to be involved in Bitcoin, what I perceived is that most of the opportunities to be involved in Bitcoin had to do with software development or kind of a more of a sales type role. And as a CTO at Owlet, I did a lot of software. I'm able, I can write software, but it's not my passion. And so when I came into the space, I was like a little bummed because I felt like, how do I really employ my passion in this space? Naturally I kind of gravitated towards mining. And I really like this concept of reusing the heat, right? I had seen that we've got these big miners that have, these big publicly traded companies that have these huge centralized mining farms, and they're just wasting all this heat. How can, if the plebs are gonna have an opportunity, we're gonna hyper decentralize, we have to engage more and more plebs. We have to get more people involved. And so, as I looked at this space, I loved the idea of recapturing the heat. I was like, all right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to start mining with heat. Well, that was, you know, the S9 was kind of on its it was kind of starting to phase out, and S19s were most of the miner. Yeah. They were the kind of the state of the art miners. And so I bought an S19, didn't do my research enough. And lo and behold, it needs 220 volts. Right?
You must've been bummed.
Yeah. So in my house, I have 220 volts at the stove and 220 volts at the dryer. And, you know, I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just go and install. And I'm an electrical engineer, not an electrician, but electrical enough.
Oh, we lost Zach temporarily. Sorry. Now you're muted. Can't hear you right now. You went blank for a second and we lost your voice.
Sorry about that.
No worries. Can you hear me now? Absolutely.
I forgot to put my phone on Do Not Disturb and I got a call coming in. So, So I was just about ready to go and install my own 220 volt outlet. You know, all right, cool. I'll make this work. And I thought, wait a minute. I bet that I'm not the only interested Bitcoin miner that has the same problem. And, you know, while I could just go and install this 220 volts, not a lot of people are going to be able to do that either because they don't have the skill set or they don't have the permission, right? There's a lot of people that are renting. There's a lot of people that don't feel comfortable just punching holes in their walls and running 220 volts around. And so I thought there's an opportunity here to solve a problem for others that, you know, might not have access to 220 volts. And so I took this miner that I had bought. I actually bought a little pigtail splitter so that I could power it from the same outlet as my dryer. And I opened it up and I started sniffing around using some hardware tools. I started sniffing around and trying to understand what was going on inside the miner. And I came to the realization that the hashboards inside the miner, they just want 12 to 15 volts DC. They don't need AC voltage. And so the power supply is, you know, taking in 240 volts and converting it to 12 to 15 volts. And so I thought there's gotta be a way to be able to get these hashboards. If I can supply the correct voltage and sufficient current, I should be able to power these hashboards from any power supply I want. And that's when I had the thought to create a Loki board, essentially a power supply spoofer that would allow it would trick the control board into thinking that it was paired with the proper power supply. And then that would allow the control board to signal the hashboards to start hashing. So that's essentially what the Loki board's doing. Now you asked, where does the name come from? My heritage is Norwegian. So I kind of have this, like, you know, this tie to kind of Norse mythology, Norse culture, and Loki being the god of mischief or deception. I thought, hey, what a fitting name, you know, because this little chip is deceiving the control board into thinking that it's running from a Bitmain power supply when in fact it isn't.
There's also the Nord cloud or Njord cloud line I see there. Yeah. So I can understand the link thing. Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, so Njord being the Norse god of wind and sea, and you know, with it, we'll probably get into it a little later, but it controls, you know, an AC infinity fan. So
those are pretty cool. And yeah, I definitely want to get into that. Weren't you, like, when you first were plugging it in and you were just using the pigtails straight from the 220 volt into your S19 and figuring things out? I know there probably isn't a huge amperage draw. I'm guessing around 1.5 amps drawn to the miner. I could be wrong, but
you mean before you start hashing?
Yes.
Yeah. Before you start hashing, it's almost nothing.
So there wasn't any concern on your part, because 220 volts, every time I hear that number, it's like, oh man, I don't want to touch that or get near that. But I mean, given your pedigree, you're an electrical engineer, you figured out how to do that, but you weren't concerned at all or anything that you were going to.
Yeah. Look, there's that, you guys have probably seen that old poster from the 60s or 70s with electricity, a lightning bolt holding a knife, and it says electricity kills. Like, you never want to get too comfortable working with something like that. So yeah, my heart rate's a little elevated. I feel the adrenaline running when you're opening up a new high power box for the first time. Like, you don't want to take it lightly. So yeah, it was definitely nerve wracking, but you know, I, with my passion being in hardware and having worked around this stuff a while, I ventured to do it.
So, and, Oh, sorry.
While I've gotten a few 400 volt surprises, because these power supplies have large 400 volt capacitors in them, and when you touch them, I actually just got one yesterday. Luckily, it just touched my finger. I touched it with my fingers, made a dumb move, touched it with my fingers, and it hit me really hard in the elbow. But luckily,
holy cow! I'm like, the hair is standing up on my arms right now just thinking about that. So, okay, just I want to make sure I have it correct and everybody understands what it is. So you have the power supply, and right now you're using ideally the S9 power supply, the PSU that is powering the hash board, sorry, the control board. And on the control board is the low-key kit, and the low-key kit then and the hash board connect to the hash, sorry, the control board to the hash board. So basically you're using 120 volts to your power supply unit that was from an S9. That's powering your control board, and then that's powering also your hash board. And it's a single hash board per Loki kit per control board. That's the way it works. You can't power more than one at a time.
So first off, yeah, you're tying this all together in what I like to call a Loki rig, right? You're describing all the different components for a Loki rig. The Loki board itself is just this little tiny circuit board that plugs into the control board, but then it enables you to build a Loki rig. So now that we can hash from any suitable DC power supply, you can start to part out an S19 into smaller, lower wattage miners that are much more efficient than the S9, right? So you can kind of build a Loki rig that's similar to the S9 in power output and in heat, but is giving you, 3 to 4 times as much hash rate for the same power consumption. And so, yeah, to do that, what we end up doing is we need to grab a DC power supply that can run from 120 volts. There are lots of DC power supplies out there, but probably the most ubiquitous one in the Bitcoin mining community is the APW3++, the old F9 power supply. That one right there. There's lots of them out there. You can actually open up that power supply. There's a guide on my website that teaches you how to modify that power supply to put out a higher voltage so that you can hash faster, or a lower voltage if you want to hash more efficiently. But you can take this power supply now. You can do the modification if you want to target your hash strategy. And then you can pair that with a Loki kit, a control board, and a hash board, all inside of your choice of enclosure, and build up this little Loki rig. Now, you do have an option, and I explain this all in the Loki user's manual that gives some suggestions on how to build these Loki rigs. But I explain that you can power 1, 2, or 3 hash boards from an APW3++, depending on a few key factors. The first and by far the most important factor is you never want to try to, you need to know how much current your outlet is rated for. And you never want to draw more than 80% of the what that outlet is rated for. So if you're running on a 15 amp circuit, I'm not super familiar with what's common in Canada, but in the US you have
15 amp is typical.
Yeah, so you have 15 and then newer homes will have like 20 amp circuits, right? So if you're running on a 15 amp circuit, 15 times 120 volts, you're looking at 1800 watts. Discount that by 20%. You never want to draw more than 1500 watts. And I take that even further and say, really, you shouldn't be drawing more than 1200, 1300 tops. So that's the first thing to note. Now, when you're building out these Loki rigs, you can think about your strategy. Do you want to go for max efficiency, or do you want to go for max utilization, right? So if you've got, maybe you want to just get as much hash rate out of the thing as you can for as few overhead costs or part costs as possible, then maybe you're going to put 3 hash boards in one and just significantly underclock them. Mm-hmm. And sorry, that's going to lead actually to the most efficiency, but it's going to cost a lot of hash boards, right? But instead, maybe you want to, you don't worry so much about efficiency because you're not worried about, or because you're reusing the electricity for heat or the power usage for heat, in which case you're probably going to want to max out your hash rate. And in that case, you'd want to split up the hash boards. If you buy an S19 or an S19K Pro, you're gonna want to, if you're trying to maximize the hash rate you can get out of that single unit, you'll want to break it up into 3 individual Loki kits or Loki rigs that are run on 3 individual circuit breakers in your home.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, a lot of kind of technical detail there, but yeah, you can build those out.
So somebody in the chat, and I'm just going to say it once because he's asked me to say it. He says that the Hulk is greater than Loki. He's saying something to do with pre-Disney. It's beyond me. But the question now I would have for you, what is the lowest amount of power draw you could have per board before it just simply fails?
Yeah, so you can actually, there's actually not a lower bound. You can draw, you can target 50 watts on these. You can target a insanely low amount, but the problem is your efficiency just tanks. So you, depending on the variant, the Bitmain S19 variant, you'll start to see efficiency roll off significantly. But that being said, you know, you've got, if you go to altairtech.io, they're selling what they call the Urlacher, which is a variation of a Loki rig, made popular by Avril at Altair Tech and David Urlacher, a developer from Luxor Technology, Luxor. And they essentially said, hey, we can take an S19 K-Pro, leave all three hashboards in there, and run this thing from 120 volts. And they're using a Loki card, and they're just swapping out the PSU and putting in the APW3 and running all three of them. It ends up consuming about 1200 watts. And mm-hmm. you know, you get close to 60 terahash from that thing. So 60 terahash from 120 volts is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that is. So in your eyes then, if somebody is willing to go through this, they're going to order the Loki board and they're going to order the power supply unit, which is the best S19 in your opinion? And this is, you know, they have to do your research. So don't, we're not going to hold your feet to the fire here, but which is the best S19 model you would say for somebody to do this?
You know, I'll tell you what I've done. I'm working on building up a fleet of space heaters to go and deploy to friends and family and people that need heat in the winter. And because I'm not super worried about efficiency, I'm going with the S19s because you can get them for $400 a piece, right? You're going to get 33 joules per terahash when you underclock them, and you can get a good 40, you know, you can get about 38 to 42, just kind of depending, terahash on 120 volts. And so I really like the S19s right now, but the S19 J Pros have probably been a favorite. If you've got a little more cash to spend, the S19 K Pro is a great device as well. I haven't seen a ton of Loki rigs built with the S21 yet, just because they're kind of top of the line, right? The Loki rigs are usually hand me down, so to speak, or second market or second hand miners that people purchase. And so we haven't seen a ton of S21s yet, but in theory, you know, if you want to just maximize the hash you can get from 120 volts, you know, the S21 at 15 joules per terahash when underclocked, you're going to be able to get, you know, on a 20 amp circuit, you're looking at 100 terahash.
Wow. Now we're going to dive deep into that. But Terup is saying in the chat, he's saying that the power draw is about actually the average or below a microwave running. So just to give people a context about the power draw here for one of these, if you're going to be underclocking and using the 120 volts to power a single hashboard, it's going to be at or below microwave running it. So, you know, it's not very power. It doesn't consume too much power. I didn't know that you've figured out S21s. I thought you were only targeting at this. I know that you probably were expanding to the S21s, but is that something that just you recently did, or was that always a possibility?
You know, I actually didn't have to do much work for it because, and I'm a little bit at the mercy of Bitmain here, but Bitmain decided to make the S21 work with any APW12 power supply. It's not like, so most S19s want a very specific variant of the APW12, but the S21, they decided to allow you to run it with any variant of the APW12. And so because it can run with an APW12, the Loki board is just spoofing an APW12. So it actually works with S21 out of the box.
That is funny. Wow. Yeah. There's two models right now, I believe, of S21s on the market. Is that correct?
There's the S21, there's the T21, and then they've announced the S21 Pro. But yeah, as far as I know, that one isn't available to general. It doesn't have general availability yet.
Are you planning to do anything that's non-Bitmain?
So I do have the on the Loki board, not yet. I don't have any plans for the Loki board, but the Njord board, I do have plans to have it work with the What's Miner as well, and it's among other miners.
Well, you mentioned the Njord board. Talk about what it is, because we haven't really touched on it too much.
Yeah. So kind of going along with this theme, right? My motivation here is to, how do we enable plebs to participate in mining so that we can really hyper decentralize mining? And I've got to say, Canada punches way above its weight when it comes to pleb mining. You know, some of the numbers I see from my website, you know, Canada's population wise is a fraction of the US, but I sell just as many pleb miner parts to Canada as I do the US. So good job, Canada. You guys are really bringing the fight in this.
We love Bitcoin.
Hyper decentralized. Yeah. Well, and you got the cold weather, right? So it just makes sense to be heating your home with Bitcoin miners. So, so on this theme of trying to develop equipment and technologies that will allow pleb miners to continue to compete or, you know, play this mining game. As I was kind of wading into this space, I noticed that a lot of pleb miners were replacing in order to make it more feasible and palatable and less intrusive to run a miner in your home. The first thing they do is rip off the stock fans and they put on these inline duct fans that are much quieter. And the most popular one is the AC Infinity, which, you know, coincidentally was designed to be used in marijuana growing in California. And they did a fantastic job developing a really quiet, really high power fan. I was noticing a lot of pleb miners were putting these inline fans on, but the problem is the miner's control board wants to, its fan control protocol follows the 4-pin PC fan protocol, and the AC Infinity fan has a totally different control protocol. And so what a lot of plebs were doing is they're just setting the fan to a fixed speed and letting it run at that fixed speed regardless of the temperature of the chips. And it worked fairly well, but the problem that happens there is as ambient fluctuates up and down, you know, a lot of people are running in their attics or they're running in their garage in the middle of winter, it can get really cold. So as ambient, you know, in the daytime it's warm and the nighttime it's cooling down. And as ambient temperature can fluctuate by 30, 40 degrees in some places, your chips are going to be fluctuating by that much as well because you're holding a steady airstream with different ambient temperatures. And those chips really don't want to see those big temperature swings. That temperature cycling is actually really, really strains the electronics a lot and can really accelerate their life cycle. And so when I looked at this, I said, hey, wait a minute. I can develop a little chip that will, a little circuit board that will translate the control board's control signal into something that the AC Infinity fan can recognize. And so what the Njord board does, you plug it into the control board, and then you plug the little AC Infinity fan into the Njord board, and it will allow the control board to now control the speed of the AC Infinity fan, thus keeping your hash board, your hash chip temperature consistent and, you know, in theory, increasing the longevity of the health of those hash boards.
So this whole setup with the AC Infinity fan and the Njord board, does that also work with aftermarket firmware like, say, Brains OS or Lux OS or anything along those lines?
Yeah, it does. It works with all of them.
And it's just basically plug and play, and it's just going to work with seamlessly. There's not much tinkering you have to do aside from entering some variables you want to achieve in terms of heat.
You know, you have to access the control board. So you have to open up the top, what they call the top hat or the control board cover. And then you have to unplug the stock fans. Usually there's, you know, people will either 3D print their own shrouds or they'll go to somewhere like CryptoCloaks, or in Canada, you've got Nakamoto Mining that has a great shroud kit. And you install those shroud, you remove the fans, the stock fans, you install those shroud kits, but really easy to install, right? A few screws. Take out the fans with a few screws to take them out, and then a few screws to install those shrouds. You plug the fan in, but yeah, I mean, it's really about as plug and play simple as you can get. The one thing I will say is, depending on which firmware you're running, each third party firmware has a slightly different PID controller. I guess, you know, each company has their own developers that they want to take their own crack at developing a PID controller to try to maintain the temperature of those chips. And so, because the Njord board because the AC Infinity fan is different than the stock fans, it produces a lot more airflow than the stock fans, it actually detunes the PID controller. And so what can happen is you can start to get these oscillations where the fan will ramp up and then ramp way down and ramp up and ramp way down. It's called ringing in PID controller terms, because the PID controller is expecting, it's not expecting as much air as it gets when, so let's say the chips are getting hot. So it says, hey, give me 10% more fan speed. Well, the PID controller was tuned expecting a certain airflow and it's getting, you know, way more. So it calls for 10% and then the chips cool way down. So anyway, what I'm describing here is what's known as ringing in the PID control world. And so what does it mean for someone installing a Niord board? You need to be aware of which firmware you're running, and then you need to configure the Niord board just by putting these little configuration jumpers on the Niord board. You need to configure them to run with the firmware you're running. So there's that the Niord board comes with a little quick start card that has the correct configurations, right? So if I'm running Vanish, I need to, or a Vanish variant like ASIC.to, there's a handful of firmwares that all kind of are derived from Vanish. I need to go configure it to run Vanish so it doesn't ring as much. If I'm running Brains or Stock, I actually don't need to do anything. LuxOS is another one. I don't need to do anything. It just works out of the box. But.
So you have to have some technical knowledge. Look, if you're going to be doing this anyways, you're going to have some capability of taking stuff out, plugging it in, and unscrewing. So to do this, to make the Niord board work with the Infinity AC Infinity fan and to properly configure it, I mean, I don't think it's going to be too far outside the capabilities of whoever's doing this. So it's really cool.
Yeah,
I mean, somebody's asking in the chat, and I wanted to, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you've got to be comfortable opening up the miner. But that being said, you're not accessing any of the high voltage parts of the miner. It's all the place you're accessing is low voltage. You know, it's kind of like when you open up your computer's motherboard and there's some little pins you need to remove and stuff. That's about the level of technical ability you need.
Well, at the very least, even if you're just going to plug and play something like an S19, you're going to have to clean it periodically, and that's going to require you opening it up and doing... So you're already there, right? You just might as well just change a few jumpers here. I'm like, so it's not like it's so far out of the realm of possibility, but somebody's asking about the longevity, and you were talking about the longevity of the ASICs, because the heat, you know, I know the S9s are legendary in terms of their ability to sustain heat and just have a long lifespan. But the S19s, they have that same type of just robustness to them, or are they like finicky when it comes to heat cold cycles? Like what's your experience with them?
Yeah. So unfortunately they're not near as robust as the S9. And it's a function that the T21s are even more temperamental. They don't tolerate temperature swings as well as the S19s did. And it comes down to channel width in the actual ASIC chips themselves, right? So the way that they drive better efficiencies is narrow and narrow channel widths at the actual gate level. And so, you know, you hear them talk about, oh, well, this is 3-nanometer technology. At the T21s, you know, 3-nanometer versus 5-nanometer versus 7-nanometer. And, you know, I forget what the S9s were, but they were a lot higher, they had a lot wider channel width. And that channel width makes them less finicky when it comes to temperature. So unfortunately, it's a trade-off between efficiency and temperature robustness. And so as we march down further and further in channel width to, you know, see chasing after higher efficiencies, unfortunately, it's a reality we've got to live with, that these machines are going to get more and more temperature temperamental. And so, you know, in theory, if you can keep them at a constant temperature, they should be happy. But if they get too hot, they don't like that. And I think that one's pretty intuitive. Like most people realize like, yeah, okay, I don't want to fry the chip by getting it too hot. But maybe one that's not as intuitive for people is temperature cycling. What happens is you cycle the temperature on these hash boards is you get temperature thermal expansion coefficients of all the different materials on the boards are going to dictate that different parts of the board expand and contract at different rates given the change in temperature. And so as the temperature of the hashboard goes up and goes down and goes up and goes down, what happens is you have all these parts just at the micro level expanding and contracting and really torquing on each other. And it just starts to kind of eat up, you know, just kind of starts to tear apart the board at the inside. It stresses out a lot of the solder joints, stresses out a lot of the silicon wafers inside the components that are bending. And so, you know, it's not a guaranteed failure, obviously. You know, it's not like, oh, you do one temperature cycle and this thing's going to break. But you want to limit the number of temperature cycles. And so really that's where trying to maintain a tight temperature range while running these boards and then keeping it there is really important. So I had a customer of the Njord board that was up in Wisconsin running a barn full of these S19s.
Barn full, I love it.
It was literally a barn full, yeah. Great guy. And you know, he talked about, you know, up in Wisconsin, pretty cold, probably not as cold as what you guys get, but you know, he'd say that, you know, sometimes he'd get these like negative 20, negative 30 degrees nights, and his miners were not happy the next morning. Right. And so he was asking me, how's the Njord board going to work in that scenario? I said, well, in that scenario, the Njord board will probably go down to about 3% duty cycle, maybe 10% duty cycle, but it's going to tune way, 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 way down to try to maintain. Well, and sorry, I need to mention that, you know, he was running the AC Infinity fans at constant speed. And so then he'd get hit with a 20 below night and he just, you know, all the hash boards are running at, you know, maybe 5 degrees Celsius.
There's frost building on it.
Yeah. And so, and it, the miners are just really cold. And then it starts to heat up and they go back up to the, you know, 65, 70 degrees Celsius. They don't like that huge temperature swing. So with the Njord board in line there, you know, now he just finished his first winter with all of them outfitted with Njord boards. And he doesn't have the same problem, right? When those cold nights hit, the Njord boards are modulating the fan down. Really low.
Yeah, Torup Hoddle is saying that S9s were a 16 nanometer chip. Thank you for giving that. So I'm just curious, in particular of the OSs that you're putting in it, or the firmware, any particular one that you're fond of that works well, or just everything seems to work fine? I just want to know if you seem to have, you know, if you would like to suggest one over another if somebody's going to do this.
You know, I've played around with, I think, every firmware now. Got a lot of hash cycles on all the firmwares. All of them have their own strengths, and all of them have their weaknesses and setbacks. And so you kind of got to pick and choose. I wish that I could set all of the, you know, I think the three big ones that I've kind of settled in on are Vanish, Brains, and LuxOS. I wish that I could sit the three of them down in a room and say, hey guys, let's create the, you know, the ultimate, let's take the best of all of these and put them into one. But I will say that when I'm running a miner, I'm usually looking at, I usually reach for Vanish first. I've just found that Vanish is kind of the AK-47 of firmware, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Brains has been pretty good, but I would say that Brains is kind of the Swiss Army knife of firmwares, and sometimes a little too smart for its own good, to where it can, you know, it wants everything to be just right. LuxOS, I think my biggest complaint about, there's a lot of good things that LuxOS does. I really like the team there as well. They're extremely responsive, really smart guys, very, very in tune with the pleb miner community, which there's that, you know, that gets a lot of bonus points. I think the thing I struggle with there is their metrics in their firmware dashboard, or in the miner's dashboard, just aren't very accurate thus so far. So I'll, and they're not, I think they fixed this, but there was one point where they didn't play nice with a lot of pools. They worked great with the Lux pool, but they had a hard time getting workloads from other pools and stuff. And so anyway,
that's fair. No, and that's a great answer. Like, I mean, you've more than answered it, and hopefully it's going to lead people down the right path in terms of what they do with this. So the low key kit, I'm curious that you said this is, in your eyes, you wanted this to target home miners, pleb miners. Is there any application for this in industrial setting, or it just doesn't work there particularly well?
You know, I've had a few people reach out. I think that probably the most compelling industrial scale application is solar. So when you're mining from solar, because if you think about what's happening with solar, right, a lot of people go from solar panels that produce DC, right, and then they put in an inverter to convert that to AC, and then they run that through the power supply that converts it from AC back to DC, and you're taking efficiency hits all along the way. And so some of you that are listening might be familiar with, I think it's Dirty Shakti, I think is how you say it on Twitter. He's, you know, he lives out in Wyoming. He's kind of living off grid with solar and wind, and he mines from solar and wind, and he has this hash box that allows you to go solar direct to ASIC. So you can cut out all the stuff in between. So he's been able to show that you can actually get a lot more efficiency going solar direct to ASIC, and he's using the Loki board to help him accomplish that.
Somebody's asking about how about mining for a hot tub. I guess you're just using the excess heat for heating up the water, so it works fine. I guess even also for a pool as well, but maybe there's not enough heat coming off it to make a huge difference for a hot tub. Maybe for a pool you might have.
No, there's absolutely an application there. Yeah, there are a few other people in the space that are developing hot tub heaters specifically with Bitcoin mining. You know, they're building Bitcoin miners into hot tub heaters. It's not a huge application for Loki because those hot tubs are usually equipped with 240 volts.
Yeah. So that I'm curious. That being said,
I was just going to say, that being said, there, you know, another interesting application we're seeing is over in Europe. You know, they've got 220 volts everywhere in Europe. So you think, well, it's not going to be an application there. But interestingly, there are a few different people that are working on building space heaters with single hashboard units, and they want to use the APW9, or sorry, they want to use the power supply for the S9, which is the APW3, to help, you know, cut down costs. And so that's another application where it's like, okay, even though they have 220 volts, they're still interested in the Loki, because it allows them to use cheaper power supplies and break them out into single hashboards.
Yeah. And so I'm curious then, what's next for you? Do you have something on the agenda that you, maybe, I mean, I don't want to, if something's secretive, obviously don't bring it up, but I'm curious what's coming up next for you.
Yeah. So right now I am working on Loki V2. So I need to explain some of the limitations of Loki V1 in order for the features of V2 to make sense. So with Loki V1, it's literally just a power supply spoofer. So it's telling the control board, yep, everything's good. So the control board will use, what kind of happens here is the control board goes out to the power supply in a normal setup, and it does a digital handshake. It gets the information from the power supply, verifies that it's a Bitmain power supply, and then the control board will tell the power supply what voltage it needs to set. What it needs to set its output voltage to based on how much hash rate you're trying to get out of the miner. So if you're trying to go higher hash rate, you need more voltage. If you want more efficiency, lower hash rate, you need lower voltage. So the control board will send that communication back and forth. Well, Loki V1, all it does is when the control board does that first digital handshake, the Loki board says, yep, I'm an APW12 power supply. And then when the control board says, hey, set your voltage to X, Loki says, got it. It confirms and says, I set the voltage to X, but it doesn't actually change the voltage. So you have a static voltage, which from the Loki customers that have, you know, the feedback I've gotten from my Loki customers is, you know, it'd be nice if I want to change my hash strategy and I want to go from max hash to max efficiency. It would be nice if you really want to get max efficiency, or if you're changing between those strategies, you have to manually go in, open up the power supply and adjust the resistor value in there to get it to output more voltage or less voltage. And it's not feasible. So the goal of Loki V2 is I figured out how to make it so that an APW3, which is a static or fixed voltage output power supply, I figured out how to make it variable voltage. I can get it to go anywhere from 12 volts to 14 volts on demand. So the idea with Loki V2 is the control board will tell it to go to that voltage, and then with a single wire connection back to the APW3, back to the power supply, I can change that voltage up and down. So it now allows us to have dynamic voltage control using an APW3.
So is there something you're actually putting into the APW3? I mean, you said you're touching a wire from the Loki kit to the APW3, but are you actually putting a different board inside it to make it all worthwhile?
No, you have to open up the APW3.
Yeah.
And instead of replacing, I have a guide online of how to modify the voltage by replacing a resistor. Well, instead of putting a resistor in there, you'll instead solder a wire where that resistor would have gone. You'll solder a wire to it and bring that wire out to the Loki V2. And then the Loki V2 will sit on the control board just like Loki V1 does, but it'll have this little wire, a single wire going between the APW3 and Loki V2. And so now, the the output voltage of the APW3 will be adjustable. In addition to that, the Loki V2 will also work with the APW9, which is a power supply, which was the power supply used on the S15. Or sorry, the S17 was used on the S17, which you may remember the S17 was a nightmare. It was a terrible miner, very finicky, very bad quality. The nice thing is those miners, I bought 1,000 of them for $20 a piece. And so I get the control board and the power supply for $20. Like you can't get,
that's
you can't
super
get a cheaper
cheap
power supply and control board.
So, are you going to start selling some of the power supply units with the soldered cable on it? Because I could imagine some people being reluctant to do that, like soldering it themselves. But are you going to start selling that to people directly?
I don't have plans to do it myself at Pivotal Pleb. I want to continue to focus on I need to guard my time so that I can continue to focus on developing the next hardware piece. But I do have partners that have started to, distributors and other people in the space that are taking the Loki board and kind of creating their own business opportunities to go and do that as a value added service for pleb miners.
I know here in Canada we deal with DTEC quite, so I know you know them. So yeah, in fact, we had Jonathan on the show not too long ago, and yeah, great guy. I love chatting with him. So I just wanted to mention them as well for people in Canada looking to buy equipment. But in terms, I mean, I know we're getting kind of long here. I just got a couple of questions before we wrap up. Thoughts right now on the hash rate continually going up, because we had the halving just take place last month. And since you seem to have a much closer connection to the mining industry than any of us do, what are your thoughts on this hash rate continually going up?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's first off, it's an incredibly bullish sign for the Bitcoin network at large. And I think it's a reality that we've got to prepare for. You know, one thing we haven't talked much. I know most of what we've talked about has been around Pivotal Pleb and the products that Pivotal Pleb offers. We probably don't have time to get too much into it on this episode, but another company I'm working on in the Bitcoin space is called Unbound, where our goal is to heat 1 million homes with Bitcoin miners in the next 5 years. And we've got some pretty cool technology that's allowing us to identify energy arbitrage opportunities where we can convert homes that are heated, usually rural homes in the US that are heated with propane. We can save a homeowner several hundred dollars a month just by switching their heat source from propane to electricity, because the price of propane in the US has gone up, has outpaced, you know, the price increases in propane has outpaced the price increases in electricity. 20 years ago when a lot of these homes were built, the propane and electricity were at cost parity, whereas now propane costs quite a bit more and homeowners don't realize that, hey, if you just start heating with electricity, you can save a bunch of money. So we go in, we own the miners, we go and deploy the miners in their homes. They save several hundred dollars a month on their heating bill and they pay for the electricity. We get the Bitcoin. They're happy to pay for the electricity because they're saving money. We get the Bitcoin. But the reason I share that in addressing your question about the hash rate is, you know, when we started working on this business model for Unbound, it was in the depths of the bear market when hash price was way down and hash rate just kept going up. And I was actually really glad to be starting a company and working on the business model in a bear market, because that gets baked into the company's DNA, right? It causes us to say, hey, it's not going to work for us to just go waste all this heat or to just go try to compete with the big PubCo miners. Like, we have to be smart and nimble and figure out how to make it work with super low hash prices. And so I think that that's, you know, as we think about hash price or hash rate and what it's going to be doing and consequently hash price, you know, barring the God candle that a lot of Bitcoin Twitter people talk about, barring the God candle, I think we're going to look at just a continually falling hash price, because we're going to see a continually increasing hash rate. And so I think anything we do, we need to be thinking ahead and saying, okay, it makes sense today, but does it make sense 3 years from now? Does the efforts I'm doing, or does the model I'm working on make sense, you know, 3, 5, 10 years from now? And I think as long as you have a need for the heat, the answer is yes. Now you can go and tweak your model or tweak your operations or tweak your strategy to try to make it more efficient to get more Bitcoin. But at the end of the day, like, it still makes sense if you live in a home that's heated by propane in the US, it still makes sense to run an S9 Bitcoin miner and just stop using propane and start using electricity, because you're going to save money and you're going to get a little Bitcoin. So that's kind of how I think about hash rate going up. Sorry, I know it's long-winded and convoluted.
No. And how far into this Unbound project are you? Is it simply just a concept right now, or are you rolling out product for people to put in their homes and have them heat their homes with it?
So we did a small pilot this last winter. We distributed a petahash among about 25 users, right? So nothing huge, but we wanted to go prove out the business model and the concept. This next winter, I'm currently sitting in my garage, the only quiet place away from the kids in the house. But you know, I'm surrounded by boxes of equipment that we're using to build 200. Our goal is to get to now 10 petahash this next winter. So about 250 homes. And we're bootstrapping it. We're taking it one step at a time. I'll mention in my last startup Owlet, you know, we raised $250 million of capital over 10 years. I've done the whole VC thing, raised the money. And one of the takeaway lessons I learned was venture capital money can dilute you it can dilute your perception on reality as you kind of chase this mantra of growth at all costs. And I saw that it distorted our decision-making abilities at Owlet, to where we did some funny things we wouldn't have maybe done if we were growing a responsible low time preference business. And so that's kind of the approach we're taking with Unbound. We'll roll it out, you know, one petahash this past year, 10 petahash next year, hopefully 100 petahash the following year, and then one exahash the year after that.
Sweet. The question is open for investors, but it sounds like no. It seems like that's not an option right now.
I wouldn't say it's not open for investors, not currently, but we are not going to take the traditional VC route, you know, where we go and try to raise a couple million dollars in a seed round and give up 30% of the business and then get pressured to grow at all costs and make bad business decisions.
So that's the future of Bitcoin mining in your eyes. It's you're going to have people heat their homes on scale. And that's going to be, you're like decentralizing mining, making people take control of it. Although these people are just simply heating their homes and you're going to be collecting the Bitcoin, you're still, mining is still decentralized in a way. So that's in your eyes.
It's almost the future of Bitcoin mining. There's one more aspect to it. Technically, if it was just Unbound going and distributing these miners to a million homes, we're not decentralized, because Unbound is a single legal entity.
Okay. Right?
That might find themselves on the wrong side of the Department of Justice, like Samurai did, right? So that wouldn't be decentralized. And our mission is to hyper decentralize. We share a lot of the same ethos that DTEC, our decentral tech, shares there in Canada. In fact, I know Jonathan's spoken to him a lot. We've collaborated on several things. And we both share this deep-rooted mission of we need to hyper-decentralize. And so the other aspect of the Unbound business that I didn't talk about was our goal is actually to be able to eventually sell these miners our goal is to go out and find Bitcoiners in these small rural communities that want to develop their own decentralized Bitcoin network. So we sell the miners directly to these Bitcoiners, and then they go and find friends and families in their communities, and they get to build out their own network, you know, 40 terahash at a time, right? So they can, the goal that we're aiming for is about $700 to $800 for each of these miners. So pretty good, you know, 40 terahash at $800, pretty good low scale price per terahash. And it'll allow Bitcoiners in these rural communities to go and build out their own decentralized network at their own pace. You know, they can do it in the moonlight hours. With the idea being they get these distributed to friends and families in their small communities. And now, you know, my hometown in Idaho, 3,000 people, everybody goes to church. Everyone talks at church on Sunday, you know, and if I can get into three people's homes, I can get into the whole community. And now the whole town is heating with Bitcoin heaters instead of propane.
It's a Bitcoin Mecca, Bitcoin mining Mecca over there. So somebody's asking it. In the chat, what to do with the heat in the summertime? Do you simply just vent it out, or you really just throttle down the ASICs, or other option?
So the business model has to work here, which is why we're so focused on getting the price per terahash for these rigs down. Our goal is to make it so that these miners can pay for themselves in one heating season. And that's only six, you know, the short answer is you unplug them in the winter, in the summertime. But our hope is that the unit economics, our goal is to make so that the unit economics work out to where they'll pay for themselves after, you know, 6 months of heating. So then any, you know, any heating seasons after that is profit.
So this has been awesome. And we're getting close to an hour. I know you have a growing family. You've taken time out of your schedule to come here, and I really appreciate that. I think it's time we wrap things up. But last thing I have for you, what's the, if they want to learn a little bit more about Unbound, is there a website they could go to or Twitter page or whatever?
Yeah, we're still pretty stealth. Unboundnetworks.net. I think there's a, you can put in your email and subscribe, but we're still pretty much in stealth mode. You know, we wanted to get through this pilot program this last winter. We want to go into this kind of slightly larger scale. We'll select maybe a half a dozen to a dozen what we call network owners, people that will go and try to build out their own networks. But for the most part, we're going to stay pretty small this next season.
And for the Loki kits and the newer boards, you can get them from pivotalpleb.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, you can buy them directly from pivotalpleb.com, or really what's probably better for the Canadian listeners is to go to Decentral Tech. You can buy them there, or Nakamoto Mining. And the reason I say that is because you're going to avoid international shipping charges, and mm-hmm. you're going to avoid customs that unfortunately Canada wants their share of it, right? So by buying through one of my Canadian distributors, you know, you'll avoid those.
But for people who want to go to pivotalpleb.com, you could buy it with Bitcoin if you wanted to. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep. 15% discount.
There you go. So just want to hand over the baton to you where people could reach you if they don't have any questions or anything. The floor is yours, and we could just sign off.
Yeah. So I think first off, I'm not prepared on it. Maybe I can send this to you. I don't know if you have show notes or something afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
There's a Telegram group called Loki Plebs. We've got almost 200 Loki builders in there. If anyone's interested but isn't quite sure that they're ready to take the plunge, or doesn't feel quite confident, or don't quite understand everything about building a Loki rig, come to the Loki Plebs channel. Lots of people in there doing lots of cool things that, you know, if I'm not available to answer questions, there's always five other people that are ready to jump on and answer the questions. So that's the Loki Plebs group. I unfortunately had to make it by invite only because we were getting a lot of scammers in there taking advantage of some of the pleb members looking for cheap hardware. But I can get you an invite link if you want to share that with the community.
Absolutely. Provide me what you want.
In addition to that, on Telegram, I'm at ZBOMZZ. And on Twitter, you can find me under Zach Bomsta.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much for coming on, Zach. I know you took time out of your busy schedule. You do have a growing family, and congratulations. I think you have a new one that just came not too long ago, like 2 or 3 months ago. Hopefully you're finally getting some rest. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Zach Bomsta, if you have any questions, you have places to go to. So with that, take care, and you'll see us back on Monday.
Awesome. Thanks, Len.